Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This is John Rocha, one third of the Geek Buddies, with this awesome ad for you. If you like this show and you want to make your own, and some of you have reached out and asked us about making your own podcast, well, let me tell you about Anchor. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. And now you can even add any song from Spotify directly to your episodes. The possibilities are endless for what you can create, whether it's music analysis, your own radio show, or something the world's never heard before. Go ahead and let your freak flag fly. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and so many more places. And you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Take it from us here at the Geek Buddies. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Now, on with the Geek Buddies show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another spoiler review episode for The Bad Batch from the
Geek Buddies!
And, of course, we are back to talk about the next episode of The Bad Batch, Episode 3. Replacements. Oh, interesting. Replacements. What does that mean? We're going to get into all of it. This is your first spoiler warning. If you haven't watched the episode, please go and watch the episode. Come on back and join us. Let's introduce ourselves. My name is the Outlaw John Rocha. I'm a writer, producer, and host here on the Outlaw Nation. Over there in the corner,
I am Michael Vogel. I'm a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And below me.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm an animation writer and a television actor where you may have seen me on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Goldbergs, and Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And joining us again this week, Laura Kelly. Please tell them where all the stuff you're doing, Laura.
Sure. So I host a podcast called Force Toast, a Star Wars Happy Hour. Those episodes come out every other Tuesday where we just drink wine and talk about Star Wars. And then I co-host The Jedi Way with John here on his channel. That's so true. Find episodes of that every other week as well.
I apologize. We were supposed to do one this week, but I went down with that Moderna vaccine like a sack of potatoes and barely am back to feeling somewhat level today. But we will have an episode on Tarkin coming soon. We did a lot of research on that, so looking forward to talking about that. And shout out to Laura Kelly, where the Princess Leia New Hope shot a hairstyle from the end of the movie. Shout out.
If only I had enough hair to do the braid and everything, but no, little updo. I'll
say, just give us all medals this time, please. All right. Anyways, let's get into the start of this thing. All right.
We're starting spicy.
Just having a little fun. This one's directed by Brad Rao and Nathan Villanueva back again. So excited to talk about this one for sure. One last spoiler warning here before we jump into our thoughts and then get into the specifics of the episode. Michael Vogel, I'll start with you. What did you think overall about this episode here, the third one in the first season?
A lot of really cool stuff to talk about. As we said last week, kind of watching this moment in history in the Star Wars universe that we've never watched before, this transition from the Republic into the Empire and filling in those gaps continues to be really, really interesting. A lot of fun character stuff. You know, I will say this isn't really a complaint because I thoroughly enjoyed the episode, but I did feel like the actual plot for the Bad Batch themselves, stranded on the moon, was maybe out of all of the things that were happening, the least interesting. Still super fun, still super good, but I kind of found everything going on with the new troopers and Crosshair and Kamino and Tarkin to kind of get me more intrigued. Whereas the Bad Batch stuff, I mean, I already love these guys. I already love Omega. I continue to love them, but I'm excited to see some of that stuff move forward in the next few weeks.
Yeah, Laura Kelly, what were your thoughts overall on this one? This one comes to us from writer Matt McNovitz, who's written on The Clone Wars, Fallen Order, Rebels, one of your favorite shows. So what did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. And I'm kind of in the same boat, I think, as Michael, where I was much more into what was happening on Kamino than I was on this, you know, mystery, very dark planet. Overall, the whole episode for me was just a little bit too dark in terms of, I'm not sure what happened with lighting, but I felt like I couldn't see anything at any point, which was really frustrating for me. But for the most part, the story in general, I really enjoyed. It was a lot of back and forth. So sometimes it was a little bit hard to stay focused on what exactly was happening because we were jumping back and forth between these two locations constantly. But yeah, the stuff that's happening with Crosshair and with this new, you know, elite squad that he's working with, I think it's going to give us some interesting storylines. It actually made me a lot more excited to talk about Tarkin too, because we got some really good Tarkin content in this, and I have some theories about where this is going to go, I think, with him. So in general, not the strongest episode we've had so far, but definitely interesting in terms of filling in some of the plot that we've missed between episodes 3 and 4 of the films.
Certainly. Imperial Governor Tarkin at this point, not Grand Moff, Imperial Governor at this point. Mike and Laura bring up excellent points. Essentially two different locations, two different storylines happening at the same time. But you imagine one is done to soften some of the darkness, and I don't mean the visual darkness that Allura alluded to, but the actual darkness of what's going on in Kamino. You have a little bit more of a lighter somewhat approach here with Omega getting more and more entrenched in with the Bad Batch. What did you think of this episode?
I really liked this episode. Okay. I thought the last episode where they were with Cut, I was like, oh, this is a nice, pleasant episode. We're getting to see the building relationships amongst the Bad Batch and Omega. This one, like, I love that we focused on Crosshair and this new elite squad. I mean, it seems like they have to firmly establish these two points of view before they inevitably clash. And I also love the fact that my buddy Noshir Dalal's role as Vice Admiral Rampart, he's playing very coy right now, because I wrote him. I'm like, dude, are you the big bad? And he wrote, well, I'm a bad. I don't know if I would say I'm the big bad. But yeah, I really like, I really, really enjoyed this episode. I mean, I do understand the critique that it was a little lighter plot-wise, but just in terms of what we got in terms of the sequences and the building of Crosshair and his team, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and shout out to your friend Noshu, was also Varko Gray, a.k.a. the Titan leader on the Imperial side in Star Wars Squadron. So they like to use the same people, ladies and gentlemen, so breaking through that wall is a good thing for an actor, for sure. I like this episode. I think it was great. Certainly, I enjoyed it a little bit more than I did the last episode, because I like when Star Wars goes dark. I like when they dive into the actual stuff that they did. I know people want to hug Darth Vader now, but he killed millions of people. So these people are actually bad people. And I like when they dial into the more the nuance and the nitty gritty of how evil they actually are. And how relevant it feels to what we see in our everyday lives, from political movements, from political leaders, from people who want to be in charge, constantly trying to find new ways to create military weapons or military soldiers that will be dedicated and loyal to imposing their rule on whatever they're ruling at the time. So I like that. And we got a little bit of that in this episode for sure. All right, let's get into this here. Let's start off first. We go, we're on the ship here. Omega is using the droid as a pillow rest, in essence. We have this conversation about food and Wrecker, basically to stress the fact that Omega is still, they haven't kind of made 100% space for Omega. And of course, that's going to get paid off at the end of this episode. But we see this kind of back and forth. And once again, oh, I guess I'm not used to having a kid on board. You know, we've this conversation about having a child, how everyone moves around and tries to figure this out. The Omega doesn't have a place to sleep. Hunter says, Wrecker, do you want her food too? And the ship has been suffering technically from hits when they left Saluka Mai. So they're figuring out, Echo's trying to figure out how to fix everything one thing at a time. Doesn't have a lot of help because Tech is really caught up in trying to figure out and build this scanner to look at this inhibitor chip. So it's really interesting. The inhibitor chip thing, we all are on board with this. We get it. But the clones are just kind of figuring it out episode per episode. And I wonder if that's going to get frustrating at some point. They get thrown out of hyperspace all of a sudden. They crash land on a desolate moon. They need to replace a part. And Omega asks if the part, this flux capacitor, for lack of a better term, is it pulls out this case, drags it out, and it is Crosshair's case. And this leads to an interesting mini discussion that maybe the chip, the inhibitor chip, made him do the things that he's doing. And Hunter, before they get into too deep of a debate on whether, you know, because Wrecker says, well, maybe Crosshair isn't a bad guy after all. They talk about how they miss him. And Hunter cuts it off, says none of this conversation is going to help us fix the ship. Mike, I go to you first on this one. Interesting conversation here where it's laying the seeds. You know, you're a showrunner. You've handled scripts covering storylines throughout an entire season. You see them kind of laying the redemption seeds here of the fact that maybe Crosshair can't control himself or can't help himself because of the inhibitor chip. What do you think about this opening scene here?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, when you were talking about the fact that people want to hug Vader, I think we are at a high likelihood that people are going to want to hug Crosshairs by the end of the series. They're definitely building a more complicated story than one would have thought with him. And it's really clear with this whole opening scene that even though we are kind of like covering a lot of the interesting territory and seeding things that we're going to go, to Shannon's point, this really is Crosshair's episode. Like, they had a lot they wanted to do with him. They had a lot they wanted to go down in establishing the troopers. And so for our main characters in the rest of the Bad Batch, we kind of get your basic MacGuffin story. We kind of get we crash on a planet, we have an object, we need to get the object, and so that's why their story doesn't necessarily move forward, because they're just finding that plot device to get them off the planet. Now, that being said, there is some really, really interesting stuff here. First of all, like you said in that opening scene with Omega, you know, the episode's called The Replacements, and that has several meanings, and Omega is one of them. Like, Omega is replacing Crosshairs on the team, and no one quite knows where she fits yet. And so that was really interesting. Also, with Echo, you know, they've now, like, 2 weeks in a row. Last week, Echo couldn't unlock the ship from the impound lot, and Wrecker had to come break it off. And now, Echo didn't fully fix everything. And he's like, look, we got a long list, we're doing everything. But now, for 2 weeks in a row, Echo, as well, is sort of like, well, what is Echo's role on the team? Because, in addition, you know, aside from Omega, he's a new replacement as well. You know, this doesn't take place too far after their arc in episode 7, and Echo's still a pretty new member of the team. So a lot of interesting stuff there with the whole idea of replacements. And then I just love Echo and Tex bickering. I think it's really cute. I really enjoy it. And I love Tex. As I said before, I really enjoy Tech, and I really just enjoyed his... after we got through the inhibitor chip, which I do think, I don't know that that's going to get boring. I think that we are going to get into really kind of delving into them figuring out what this chip does, why it does it, and seeing how that drives their bigger purpose over the course of the season beyond just escaping or being on the run. Because at some point, they're going to have some kind of bigger goal. And I imagine that might have to do with the inhibitor chip, but I just enjoyed when the ship was going down, you know, Tech's like, no critical systems are compromised. Thing goes down. Hunter's like, really? And he's like, hey, life support's working. All good. Like, he's just like, no matter what, he's got an answer. And for anyone who knows me, it's clear why I find that appealing.
Yeah, Laura, it's a great point Mike brings up here, Laura, because I mean, what are Wrecker and Hunter doing? Because, like, Echo's saying, I need help here, and it seems to be like Tech is the only one who could apparently help him. Are Wrecker and Hunter just useless in these kinds of situations? What's going on here, and what do you think about the Crosshair conversation about the inhibitor chip here?
Well, I have to say, I think that we're laying a lot of groundwork in this episode for episodes to come. We've got, you know, Tech working on this scanner object, which I think is going to lead to them, you know, trying to figure out what the inhibitor chip is and probably trying to remove them regardless of what they learn the inhibitor chips are, just to, I don't know, maybe as just like some sort of safety precaution. I think about if I found a chip in my head, I'd probably want it taken out too. So I have a feeling that's maybe something that's going to come, probably a plotline that's going to involve Rex, who we saw in the preview for the show. I also think that there's something going on with Wrecker where he's doing an awful lot of complaining about his head in this episode.
Yes.
I'm wondering if this is maybe related to the inhibitor chip. Maybe something is about to go wrong there, and that'll probably drive that plot line to happen a little bit faster, hopefully in a future episode.
Yeah.
But I think the stuff that's going on with Crosshair, I think you're totally right. This is going to end up being, I think, sadly a pretty tragic character in the end, if I had to make any prediction for any of the five, you know, sort of main characters in the show. I think it's going to end up being pretty sad what we end up seeing with him, because this episode ends really tragically for him. We just see him sort of sitting and looking troubled in his bunk, and it never even occurred to me like, oh yeah, the Bad Batch left, but he's still staying in this bunk. Now he's by himself, and now he's got this new bunch of squad people he's leading, and they're taking over all of his old squad mates' bunks, and that's kind of just sad in itself. So we've got multiple meanings of replacements, and I think tragedy to come, but I am looking forward to seeing where we move forward, especially with what's happening with Wrecker, who was obviously busy building, you know, this great little space for Omega in this episode. And then we had Hunter really having to constantly be the parent around this ship, I think. So I think that's what's probably mostly keeping him busy for the most part.
Good point. Yeah, good point. Handing out rations, making sure Wrecker's not breaking in there to get more food. That's a fair point. That's a fair point. Shannon, what'd you think about this opening scene and what they were laying the groundwork for, as Laura mentioned, not only just in the episode, but also in episodes to come this season?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely love the character work that's being done, and it's easy to gloss over what's happening with Wrecker because he's the big galoot. But the fact that he's just like, hit me again, we're low on rations. Omega instantly offers her. He's like, great.
Right.
And you had pointed out in a previous episode, John, how Wrecker and Omega mentally probably not that far apart.
Yeah.
And Wrecker immediately responds the way a hungry kid would respond, like, oh, thanks. And then once it's pointed out to him very, very explicitly, like, she doesn't have some place to sleep. Do you really want to take her food too? Yeah. Like you see that moment. It's like his gears turn a little slower on that level, but they do turn, which, you know, we see when we get to the end. Agree with Laura. The moment he started complaining about his head, I was like, oh no, we're setting the stage for Wrecker to freak out on everybody. But I also love the way Tech lives in a very black and white. He lives in a very binary world. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we are okay until we aren't.
Right.
And
right.
Until the green check mark turns into a red X. And the fact that he becomes so hyper-focused on building this scanner when the ship around him is literally coming apart. He's just like, yeah, I'll get to it as soon as I'm done with this. Yeah, I really liked this opening, and I am really curious to see what how Echo is going to how he is going to fit in as the team continues to progress.
For sure.
I also think really, really quickly before we go on, just in that scene with Omega getting Crosshair stuff, I do think it's important. We talked about this even in like the first episode when Wrecker is in the mess hall saying, I like to break things because I like to break things. It's not something that was programmed into me. Right. And now with Crosshair, with Omega saying to them, you know, it's not really Crosshair's fault. And like this whole discussion of, is it his fault that he went down this road? Is it the chip's fault? And I think as we talk about these inhibitor chips, as we see what's very likely going to come with Wrecker, we are going to get into these ideas of, even beyond the chip, like how much of the clones is their choice and how much is programmed into them. And I think that is clearly a thing that we keep coming back to.
Yeah, that was just what I was going to say. But all right, Mike, you got it. You
nailed
it.
sorry.
You nailed it. You know, you nailed it. Yeah, basically that. That's what stuck with me, and I like that because that's a philosophical concept, right? This is where I live and breathe in Star Wars. It's the philosophical concepts. I've said this many times. It's why I'll never win a Star Wars belt in this, because like I don't. It's ship numbers and speed. Like to me, it's about concepts and theoretical stuff, you know. And I love that in Star Wars. I think they do a fantastic job of it. And this idea of free will versus choice is really interesting. And I like that they're kind of coming back to it every episode, making sure you don't forget how important these inhibitor chips are, and the conversation and the clones kind of coming in terms with it as well. And you're right about the Wrecker thing. That scared the hell out of me. The second it's like, my head. I'm like, oh no. Well, you don't want Wrecker getting flipped Wrecker and Crosshair is a recipe for danger, for sure. Wrecker and Ralph, that's not what I want to see, for God's sake.
Oh, so wow, that's well done. Well done.
Thank you very much.
But anyway, let's Disney marketing someplace just did this.
Ding. But somebody, I also think
somebody in Disney Consumer Products just sat straight up in bed. Wait a minute.
But I also think it's good that it's Omega who brings out the Crosshair thing, because Omega has constantly been trying to make the Bad Batch understand that it's not Crosshair's fault. Mm-hmm. So for her to kind of, I mean, it was really kind of on the nose of her bringing that case out, being like, hey, this still is a part of it, and you guys have got to deal with it. And it'll come up again later on in the episode. All right, let's move on to Kamino. We go to Kamino next. Crosshair is being enhanced. We hear CT-9904. Tarkin and Nala Se are having a conversation here about this, about the enhancements, about how Crosshair is responding to the things that they're doing to him. And then Admiral Rampart comes in, and a little bit of professional kissing of butt between both Rampart and Tarkin. And Rampart saying, oh, I love how, you know, basically he's very dedicated to the Empire. He talks about the Project War Mantle. For those who don't know, War Mantle is one of those projects that mentioned in one of Laura and I's favorite movies, Rogue One. While Jyn Erso is scanning the Imperial records for the plans of Project Stardust, we hear that. So now we know that War Mantle, that is mentioned, is an effort to replace the clones with human soldiers, which is what this conversation is all about. The recruits that he's brought in, Rampart, is they're going to be trained under Crosshair. There's discussion about the need for loyal soldiers in order to rule across the galaxy more than clones. And then we go out to meet this squad of elite soldiers from across the galaxy. Tarkin says it could have promise. That's your cue that he's going to take your program at some point from you, and says they're designed. And I look at, because he did the same thing to Krennic. And I like this idea that the design of these, they look like the early Death Troopers, even. Or Dark Trooper from Rogue One. So, mm-hmm. Laura, what do you think about all of this conversation about clone troopers versus real soldiers? This is the beginning of the stormtroopers type of thing. What did you think about all of this?
I really loved the Rogue One shout out. So mm-hmm. That gave me a lot of my Rogue One delights. But I think that with these new soldiers, this was definitely an interesting storyline. I'm really looking forward to learning more about maybe these other three members. We kind of focused on just one in particular mm-hmm. in this episode. But yeah, I think you're I wasn't going to spoil it yet, but I think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned that that Tarkin is definitely going to be taking over this project.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
See him and Rampart sort of, that relationship's going to come to a head at some point, and it's not going to end very pretty. I think what Tarkin's doing right now is really interesting to me, because we're kind of seeing him like playing both sides and just kind of waiting it out to see how this goes, because he's put himself in the perfect position. If this project fails, it's not on him. He can put all of it on this Rampart guy. If right. it goes well, he's definitely going to push him aside and pull a Krennic and just completely take over and take credit for it. He's the one you don't want working in your group project, because he's not going to do anything. That's Tarkin in a nutshell, I think. But yeah, this is definitely, I think, the more interesting plot line for me, was getting to see these, bringing in this new elite squad and seeing how they're going to play into this show.
Yeah. Shannon, what do you think? I mean, this feels like the birth of stormtroopers, but also this conversation. I mean, we brought it up in the first episode, right? They brought it up. How about it's financially better for them to go the non-clone route. But this, we're seeing that Tarkin still wants to have some element of the clone thing involved here, as far as putting Crosshair in charge of these troopers.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the idea that Tarkin would use something until the wheels fall off totally lines up with his character. Like we have all this stuff left over.
True.
Let's not just throw it away. Let's use it until it is absolutely unusable. And you get this younger officer coming in, this younger vice admiral with something to prove. And he's just like, yeah, sure, I'll buy into your logic that loyalty is better than programming until this thing that we have, this resource, these clones, until they're no longer viable, that I'm going to find another younger subordinate to steal from.
Yeah, and he does eventually a number of times throughout his career. Michael, also, Nalase's watching this all happen. She's listening to this conversation mm-hmm. here between Rampart and Tarkin as well. So clearly, and we know later on, the Kaminoans are also kind of, where is their spot in all of this if they're going to mothball clone stuff or only take certain ones?
I wish that I had a time machine to go back to a younger me coming out of the theater the night that I saw Attack of the Clones.
Oh, my.
Where I looked at probably you. I was with you guys, but I probably looked at you and was like, I thought the Kamino stuff was dumb and made no sense. And I want to go back now and be like, listen, Nala Se and Lama Su, like, I'm going to it's going to be cool. Just trust me. Just stick with it. It's going to get interesting. Because it's super interesting. Like, you're absolutely right. Like, the fact that they're having this whole conversation and Nala Se is just kind of standing there, taking this all in, listening to this discussion about how they are going to slowly replace. Like, I mean, Rampart comes in and he's the enemy to her. And, mm-hmm. like, I find the whole, you know, everybody dogged on George Lucas for those prequels, like why you have to make everything political and all of this stuff. And now we're dealing with the political machinations of Tarkin and Rampart and Nala Se and the Kaminoans. And you're like, yeah, give me more of this. This is fascinating. I thought it was really interesting. The introduction of these troopers, completely fascinating. And I also think it's another nice shade to this transition that, you know, as far as we knew, there was clones and then there was troopers. But mm-hmm. the fact that there's this, oh, well, the clones, these new troopers can work with the clones and the clones can do, like, all of these little subtleties of the way it's all mixing together is really, really interesting. And a recipe for some friction, as we're going to see in a little
some
bit.
Some conflict, for sure. Yeah, they're bringing new people into the workforce and they're putting them under the manager that was there before. So this also could have really base connections to just working in any job where the new person takes over, they bring their people in to kind of work through things. So it's very interesting to see that all play out as well. So
it's the Star Wars version of The Office. It's great.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, but I like it. And also, you know, you mentioned something earlier, Michael, this idea of many meanings for the word replacements in this episode. Mm-hmm. Here we go again, replacing the clones with these new level of soldiers. So we shall see. All right, let's go back to this desolate moon. Echo and Tech are putting in the capacitor there, trying to figure how to make it work there. And then Echo hears a noise, stumbles out and sees these cocoons. I don't know about you, but I had that Mandalorian season 2 vibes from that that episode where those crazy ass snow spiders were coming at Mandalorian and Baby Yoda. They see scratches on the ship's hull. Then some creature steals the capacitor. Wrecker, as we mentioned, complains about his head being hurt from the crash. Echo and Tech go back inside, tell Hunter there was an issue with the hull. Just then, the creature appears. Omega screams. It has the capacitor in its jaws. And the Tech explains that it's an Ordo Moon dragon that feeds on raw energy. And everyone goes, dude, you could have said that before this whole crap went down. And then Hunter wants to go get the part. He tells Wrecker to stay. Wrecker wants to go because that's his programming or desire. He makes him stay. And Omega volunteers to go. And this shocked me. Hunter said yes. And she said, I'm going to be part of the team, right? So, yes, he's her dad. But in other ways, it feels like she's another clone. So, therefore, she's going to come and do these things. So, it's very interesting. Shannon, what did you think about this and him allowing her to go on the mission and this Ordo Moondragon situation?
Well, in the last two episodes, Omega has proven her bravery. In the first one, she took that, you know, one in a million blaster shot that saved them. And then in the second episode, she kind of ran through all this fire just so she could remain with Hunter and the rest of the Bad Batch. So I agree. I think initially it was sort of like, I'm really going to take a kid with you. But it's like, okay, this is our new normal. Like, she is going to be with us. This is going to happen eventually. Clearly, she wants to go. And it's a dragon that feeds on energy. What's the worst that could happen?
What do you think, Mikey? Here, I mean, this is an interesting moment because you have Tech, as you said, you get more of the banter between Tech and Echo here, but also Hunter taking on Omega in this mission. Kind of surprising for me.
Well, first, I just kind of loved like the not so subtle nods to Empire. You know, you're stranded. There's an alien creature that sort of sucks energy. You're wearing those little oxygen masks. Like, it was 100% like giving me the Empire vibes of Han and Leia and the gang and the Falcon stuck down that giant space worm's throat. So like, mm-hmm. kind of always fun when you sort of just get those nostalgia vibes in something that's new. Yeah, as far as like Hunter taking Omega, again, like this episode is called The Replacements, and this is watching her figure out where she fits on the team. And yeah. to Shannon's point, she's proven herself. You know, I've seen a lot of people sort of complain lightly. I mean, I think everyone's enjoying the show, but that mm-hmm. you have Mandalorian, which is about, you know, Mando kind of taking care of Grogu. And now we've got this other sort of parental thing going on with Hunter and Omega. And then particularly, as you pointed out, Johnny, landing on mm-hmm. this planet, you've got eggs, you've got an alien. Like, it's very season two, episode two of Mando vibes. But I think this episode also shows how these two relationships are really different. Like, Grogu, for the most part, is just a lovely, adorable, chicky-nuggy-eating thing that needs to be protected. And Omega is not that. Omega yeah. is very much paving her own way, proving that she is a very valuable member of the team. And Hunter sort of having to navigate this relationship where a part of me wants to protect you, but a part of me is recognizing that you are one of us. And as we are figuring out this new normal of the team, you fit in a way that is different than what your physical appearance would say. Mm. And I think that kind of makes the relationship between him and Omega very different from Mando and Grogu in some really interesting ways.
Yeah. And Laura, this is Star Wars, isn't it? Star Wars doing Star Wars, appealing to the kids wanting to take part in the adult stuff. You know, obviously Omega is a character created to appeal to the younger generations, younger Star Wars fans. Her wanting to go on the trip is in essence her standing in for them wanting to go on these missions, wanting to grow up a little bit. This is very Star Wars-y, wouldn't you say?
For sure. And I don't have too much more to add to what Shannon and Michael said, but I do want to point out that, like, I don't know if I were Hunter, if I would want to leave Omega with the other three. So I think that may have just been part of, you know, trying to keep her safe and probably keep her close.
I didn't think of that, but that is a really, especially with like Wrecker, headache guy over here. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Maybe you, me, and the dragon. Maybe you, me, and the dragon is the better, safer move here.
Yeah. That's saying something. That's certainly saying something. All right. Anything more, Laura? Are we moving forward?
No, let's move okay. on.
All right. Let's now this at this section of the review, I'm going to split these two storylines into two separate sections that we're going to discuss. They occur over multiple scenes, but I think it's a better way for us to discuss it all as a whole. So let's go back to Kamino. Two of the elite soldiers are complaining about the medical test they're going through. One of them says, with the Empire, and this is the one you need to pay attention to, with the Empire, I get paid, I get fed, and a roof over my head, which is more than I got with the Republic. The Prime Minister is there saying that these soldiers will never reach the proficiency level of clones. Rampart counters that soldiers who, quote, willingly enlist would pay more dividends. I don't know about anybody else, but immediately a thought of Finn in that moment, willingly enlist. Tarkin says a test is in order and then commands that Rampart send his troopers with Crosshair leading them to Onderon to confront Saw Gerrera and their crew. We go to the ship full of troopers and clones, and that same trooper who was complaining about being poked and prodded in there questions Crosshair's ability to lead. Why do they need clones if they got us? This makes no sense. And it's kind of ironic, considering that first episode we got this season, to have someone questioning Crosshair. So in essence, that trooper has become the Crosshair to Crosshair's Hunter, questioning his authority and all of that. They descend on a bunch of Saw's troops and get the upper hand. They kill people, shooting them in the back. I was really shocked at them showing people getting killed in this way in this episode. You see shooting in the back. You see the pilot trying to take off, gets dead shot in the chest there. And then Crosshair questions one of the captured people and then shoots her dead when she won't give up the information, just straight up, and says, I believe you. Then he moves to two of the civilians who look set to, and he looks set to kill them. And then the soldier who was questioning its authority steps forward, challenges Crosshair, says what they're doing is wrong. Crosshair says, this is our orders. The soldiers say, that guy says, forget our orders. This is wrong. It's always a fatal mistake to disobey orders around Crosshair. When he refuses to comply, Crosshair says, this is why I'm in charge, and then straight up murders that soldier right in front of the other soldiers and tells them to finish the mission. And we hear off screen the sounds of the screams and the sounds of them being murdered by these soldiers. The soldiers return with Crosshair, and that is the end of that scene with Tarkin and Rampart discussing even further how the effectiveness of this. And then Tarkin saying to Rampart, I leave this in your capable hands, .. for now. So let's discuss all of this. Michael, let's go to you first on this one. What did you feel about all this whole sequence here and these conversations and then the darkness of watching Crosshair straight up killing these people?
Well, first of all, I mean, there's just so much interesting little bits that are fleshing out again why this empire and stormtroopers make sense. And I mean, to your point, them saying right at the very beginning, like, you know, when that one chick is like, you know, the war's over, like, what are we doing? And he's like, yeah, I got a roof over my head, I got money, I got this, like, you're like, all right, cool. Like, I mean, yeah, the empire, like, as we said, like, the galaxy has been in this huge war between droids and clones and this whole thing happening. And now it's like the Empire comes along and be like, hey, we're going to pay you well. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And you're like, yeah, I'm going to enlist. This sounds great. The war's over and we're going to help keep order in the galaxy so that this doesn't happen again. You're like, this can sound compelling. And then what I found really interesting is when they were all on the ship headed to Onderon, the casual bigotry that one trooper had, he didn't actually address Crosshairs. And this is really specific from a writer's standpoint. He says to the other human troopers, Crosshair's standing like right there. Right. And he just completely ignores him and says, why did they put the clone in charge? He doesn't ask Crosshairs. He doesn't address Crosshair. He doesn't address Crosshair. He just talks to the others about Crosshair. And that was this casual bigotry that they had towards the clones. I found it was such a great moment because it's not something that they're hitting you over the head with. It's not that they're making a huge deal out of it. But this dude has no respect. He looks at Crosshair as a thing, as less than human. Really, really interesting. Once they got to Onderon, I guess as soon as Saw Gerrera wasn't there, as soon as like Saw Gerrera was at another location, I was like, I think all of these people are dead. There is nobody here whose name I know. Saw Gerrera is not there where he needs to escape. He is somewhere else. I was like, every danger sign, it was like red sirens were going off in my head. I was like, this is bad for everybody.
You in danger,
and then,
girl.
Yeah, like everything you pointed out was just, it was so well done. It was brutal. It was efficient. I think it's great that they let Star Wars go up to this level, to your point, like that we get the darker side of things. And Crosshair is a badass. Yeah. I mean, he's a badass in the shots he takes. Like you said, when that pilot was taking off and that one shot just took him and then the entire ship down. And then just the casual efficiency of Crosshair. He doesn't care.
Ruthlessness.
Even like, I don't even know if it's ruthlessness. Like he's not. He has no grudge.
He doesn't have the Schwarzenegger line at the end, though. I believe you. That's a little ruthless. He could have just killed her without the line, but line implies a little ruthless.
But like, I think the thing that I find interesting about him is, and it's because of the way that he's performed and everything, is just that there's not a lot of emotion. It's all very dead. Like even the I believe you. She's like, I'm not going to tell you anything. So he shoots her. He's like, I believe you. And he's like, do you all have anything to say? And they're like, we're here for the ride. And he's like, well, then you're not useful. And it's just going to take them out. And man, when that trooper stood up to him, I was like, I don't like you, trooper. I think you've been a dick this whole episode. But I feel bad for you because you're about to go down. And then just watching the way that he just sort of looped those other troopers in, like, you know, what are you going to do with that situation? You just watch this one dude go down. You're like, all right, I guess we're going to kill these civilians. And again, this is what the Empire is. I mean, this was the Finn moment at the beginning of Force Awakens, except if Finn had taken the shot. You know, you see that moment where you're a trooper, you signed up for something, you didn't know what you signed up for, you get there in the moment, and you're like, it's either these people or me, because this dude is literally going to shoot me if I don't follow these orders. I guess I'm going to choose this, and you go down the road, and now you're a trooper. And now, you know, you've taken that step into becoming what we know as stormtroopers. So I found the whole thing really, really interesting.
Yeah, Laura, I mean, this feels... like, you know, George Lucas has been very clear that he modeled the Empire from the beginning on the Nazis. And I don't want to get too deep into this because it is a comfortable topic to talk about. But this is very Nazi-esque, this idea. Oh, no, these are people who are willingly enlisting. But at the base level, you get that soldier saying, look, I get fed, I get a house, blah, blah, blah. It's not about willing. It's about the fact that I could get, like, I mean, I can live. I can pay my bills. I can have an existence. And I've got to go on these missions. But it's very basic. It's not that I'm like so dedicated to this. And a lot of people who came out, who served in the lower levels of Nazi Germany as soldiers were like, you know, some of them said, I had to exist in this dictatorship. And I'm sure there were quite a few moments where one of those guys killed certain people and other people were like, well, I better do this or they're going to kill me. So there's a lot more darkness to this scene that I anticipated. What did you think about this as you were watching it yourself?
For sure. I mean, you know, somebody mentioned, you know, like was surprised that Star Wars let it go this dark. I was surprised Star Wars Animation was willing to go this great dark.
Right.
A show like this is really aimed more towards children, I think. But yeah, I definitely see the parallels to Nazi Germany in that respect. You know, having a bunch of soldiers line up and fire on civilians and basically turning them to an execution squad. It was tragic and incredibly dark to witness. I will say that the line that we get out of, I think ESO-1 was his call sign, but he was the main squad leader of the elite squad. He has that line talking about how, you know, yeah, now I've got food and I've got a roof over my head and I didn't get that with the Republic. There's all these little hints kind of, you know, spread throughout the prequels. And then in some of like the novels, things like Master and Apprentice come to mind, but there's all these little hints that like, you know, the Republic did a lot of good things and we saw the Republic in a certain light when we were following the Jedi's story in the prequels and in the Clone Wars. But when we got to Clone Wars season 7 and we saw like those first 4 episodes with the sisters and we learned like, you know, the Republic really isn't perfect. Not everybody is living the life that they seem to have been promised. You know, that's not everybody is getting everything out of it that the basic essentials, like a roof over your head and food that they should be getting. So it's one of those things where you can kind of, this did sort of humanize that character for me in a little bit of a way, just at first of like, oh, okay, this is where we're coming from in this story. We've got this character that has probably a rather tragic backstory. The casual bigotry was really interesting to witness for sure. I caught that too, that he wasn't ever addressing Crosshair by, you know, to his face or by name. But yeah, it was surprisingly dark, but I like that we're kind of getting some of these little hints of how really it was, the Clone War was for sort of ordinary people.
Yeah.
And how it affected everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I go back to that line, Shannon, again, you know, I get a roof over my head. I get food. It's essentially like people say about dictatorships. Well, the trains ran on time. That's how they excuse that kind of thing. But I also think there's something working here subtly, Shannon, too. Two concepts, right? We talked about the inhibitor chip for clones where they kind of, you know, are what's the free will versus their inhibitor chip. And here we go with these soldiers. These are soldiers. In essence, say, like, what's their free will versus choice in this situation, too, when after Crosshair kills that other ESO-1, as Laura mentioned, the other ESs are just like, I guess we better do this. So, you know, it's interesting to have those two, this idea of free will versus command or being made to do something working for the clones and these what you could argue are probably human species in these troopers. What'd you think?
Well, I love the interplay between Rampart and Lama Sue. How Lama Sue's like, you know, these soldiers, they're never going to be able to do what clones can do. And Rampart's like, skills can be taught. And there are other ways of producing loyal soldiers. Now, ESO1 says, I'm fed, they give me a roof, and they pay me. That's not what Rampart said. He said there are other ways. And you think about the way that empires in the past or wannabe empires in the past have used propaganda. Mm-hmm. And how if we're paying you, if that doesn't get the job, then we're going to be able to construct a narrative to make you want to join. It's the whole, like, you know, it's not our fault. We're trying to protect you. Those people over there, they're the bad ones.
Right. Right.
And finding that motivation to join something that you may think it might not be the best, but it's better than what I had. Mm-hmm. Dee Bradley Baker's crosshair is just so reptilian. I mean, he's so
great description.
Fantastic. I mean, just there's just a slithering quality to him. And like, I don't think of that line when he said, you know, I believe you. I don't think of that as ruthless. I think that is 100%. That's how he would. That's how he's responding to this dead body. And the soldier saying, you know, I'll never tell you. Bang. Yeah, I believe you. The idea that he is not a man of words. He is a man of action. So even as the other ESOs are talking, especially the one guy is talking about him in the third person, just kind of like, you know, why is he clone? The whole idea that Crosshair isn't saying anything the whole time. Part of it is he's not with his brothers. He's not with his family anymore. He's with this group of strangers. But also it's kind of like, okay, bud, just keep going. I'm gonna hand you the rope that you're gonna hang yourself with. And watching again the way Vogel phrased it was perfect. Just sort of that casual efficiency to where he's just bang 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 bang. That's it. And the whole good soldiers follow orders. And you hear all the time, especially, you know, not to get into World War II, but I was following orders.
Yeah. Right. Not to excuse Nazism in any way or anybody who served on the Nazi regime. Just saying dictatorships in general have these things happening at the base level to make people do certain terrible things to stay alive. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I mean, again, as we look at like what Order 66 was in Revenge of the Sith and the way that Clone Wars from the season 6 arc with fives, right? Yeah, with the season 6 arc with fives all the way through now, where that was the first time they introduced that sort of good soldiers follow orders moment. Like in Order 66 in the movie, he's like, execute Order 66, the clones did their thing. But with that fives arc in season 6, where he all of a sudden, you saw him sort of trigger early and the good soldiers follow orders into the season 7 finale with Rex and everybody else, into now with Crosshair, this idea of good soldiers follow orders. And Johnny, you're right. I mean, it is definitely a clear tie and a reference to that.
That
I was just following orders. I was just doing this. And the thing that's sad, and again, to the point that's one of you guys made, like the clones, Crosshair included, are following orders because they don't have a choice.
Right.
These other troopers who are just doing it because they're like, shit, that guy just went down. They do have a choice. So again, this idea of what's your choice, what's your programming, just keeps kind of coming up. And it's really, really fascinating.
And I think Shannon nails it when he says the propaganda is, in essence, that's a human inhibitor chip, propaganda. It makes you do certain things. If it appeals to you, a certain section of your brain, it makes you do certain things. And just to lighten the mood a little bit, this tweet, fantastic. If you've seen The Last Dance, you know what this means. If you've seen The Last Dance,
the Bad Batch. So, wait. So Crosshair took it personally. Crosshair took it personally.
I couldn't resist putting it on the show.
That's funny.
Let's move on to the next thing. And this is the other storyline happening at the same time. Hunter and Omega are tracking down this dragon. They discuss the idea that Hunter can track. Hunter explains to Omega that every one of the clones has a special skill. Omega brings up Crosshair yet again. And she says, you shouldn't be angry at him. He's the inhibitor chip, blah, blah, blah. And he says, I'm not angry at him. I'm angry at myself because I left a man behind. So really interesting. For anybody who's done military stuff, you know what that means overall. They find the dragon. It attacks Hunter, knocks off his mask, and knocks him unconscious. Omega radios for help. No one responds. So she takes it upon herself with her flashlight and Hunter's blaster and goes down into the hole there where the dragon's at. She finds the part, is confronted by the dragon. Hunter wakes up, starts calling for her. Omega sees that the dragon is drawn to her flashlight and is not actually trying to kill her or threaten her. It's scared. It's doing its own thing. It wants to feed off energy. And so when she realizes it isn't as threatening as she thought, she throws the flashlight over there for the dragon to consume its energy. She grabs the part, climbs out. Hunter pulls Omega out. They have a bit of the father-daughter thing. Are you okay? What were you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And she says, well, this was the mission. And she didn't use the blaster after he mentions the blaster. And she said, I had to complete the mission. You juxtapose this, Laura, with Crosshair saying, I had a mission. I had to complete the mission. She's saying, I had to complete the mission. So it's really interesting. One in a better light, one in a more negative light. What did you think about this whole storyline there with Hunter and Omega and the dragon?
It was great. And I'm going to constantly come back to just loving this father-daughter relationship that we're getting out of Hunter and Omega. It's just adorable. And it's really interesting how it's sort of pushing Hunter's storyline forward, because he was one that was sort of a mystery to me too. I'm just like, well, he's a leader of the group, I guess. He can track things. I don't really know what else he's supposed to be doing. So I'm good really point. Loving this storyline for him. This was really fun getting to see a little bit more of like Omega's sort of, I guess, capability. She doesn't really have to do much, but she's very attuned to the things around her. And the fact that she was able to sort of pick up on what this dragon was after and be able to get herself out of the situation safely with the missing part that they needed to get off the planet. She's still just a big question mark, though. And here we are, we're kind of circling back to the same question of exactly what is her special ability that we haven't figured out yet. And it's just, for me, it just kind of gets more annoying the farther we get into this story, into this season, where we don't have the answer to that, because there's got to be something there. Yeah. And I just need to know what it is. So I'm hoping that that's coming soon and we're not going to continue to drag this out. But it is, we still get more of that, like Omega imitating Hunter and sort of being in like the same position, making the same hand positions as they're kind of creeping through the darkness in this episode. And it's just overall, it's really cute. So I'll be curious to see where they go with her story and her abilities, and then maybe revisit these episodes to see like what hints did they provide to us where we should have figured this out, because I'm sure they're there.
Yeah, that's for sure. Shannon, Laura brings up a good point. The father-daughter dynamic deepening. Michael mentioning at the beginning of our review, the idea of multiple meanings for replacements. Is Omega replacing Hunter, as Laura pointing out, imitating the hand signals, all of that, kind of taking it upon herself to go on this mission? What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, and we find out at the end that it certainly seems that way, that Omega is the next generation of clones. Or that's what I took from it, is that she's the next step in the cloning process. I did like as she's watching Hunter track, and she asks, like, can you teach me how to do that? He's like, well, it's an enhanced skill. We all have one. And then thinking back to Rampart, as he's like, well, skills can be taught. And Hunter's basically saying, no, they can't. this is an actual program. I mean, I loved her kind of going down into like those caves, confronting the dragon, being able to kind of figure out a solution. Like, I don't have to shoot this thing. It wants this. Let me give you this and I'm going to get out. It's interesting to see the shades of the other Bad Batch in her. We've seen her Crosshair moments.
Yep.
I don't know if this would be a Hunter moment. I feel like we've definitely seen the tech moments from her, where she is a little, I wouldn't say unemotional, but kind of matter of fact about the whole thing. Like, whenever she brings up Crosshair to Hunter, it's not like, oh, you know, don't be mad at him. It's just like, oh, you shouldn't be mad at him. Like, this is like, she's just so matter of fact about the whole thing.
Yeah.
I do agree with Laura. I mean, this is clearly the mystery of the season. I am curious, because I certainly had my theories that she's an amalgamation of all of them. Mm-hmm. But I hope I'm wrong. I hope there's something else.
Yeah, definitely. Mike, Laura mentions the deepening of the father-daughter dynamic, but also Shannon bringing up her, like, defending Crosshair, her kind of finding her spot there with the Bad Batch. This is the purpose she seems to be serving, is the bridge to reunite them back together. But what will the price be by the end of the season? What did you think about this mission overall and how they related to each other as this was going on?
I really liked it. I mean, I really enjoy Hunter and Omega's relationship, as Laura said. Look, I think that, you know, it's not unintentional that you have Crosshair completing a mission and Omega completing a mission. Clearly. And that Crosshair does it very violently. And Omega literally points out she didn't use the blaster. Mm-hmm. It's like George Lucas said, it's all poetry. It rhymes. It happens all the time in Star Wars. The other thing I think that is interesting about the way that Omega solved the problem is, to Hunter's point about enhancements and that this is what we're programmed to do, mm-hmm. Hunter's always going to track. It's what he's trained to do. Crosshairs, mm-hmm. as we see on Onderon, is going to shoot. Right. Tech is gonna tech. Wrecker is going to wreck something. Like, it's what they do. Omega went in with a blaster with one intention, took in the situation, and chose a different strategy. And I think that that's kind of, as we look at, to Laura's point, as we get, once we get to what is this clone, what is this next generation clone, what is this, this ability to kind of do more than just what you were programmed to do, to problem solve, to make different choices, to make these leaps, there might be something in that. Like, that's what I kind of took away when you compare the Crosshair story to the Omega story.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. It's essentially, you know, like, there's one way to handle things with a gun, and there's another way to handle things by not immediately resorting to the violence or resorting to anger or resorting to, for my interpretation, ruthless tactics to get a job done. So very interesting to see those two juxtaposed. You make an excellent point there, Mike. All right, let's move on. Lamassu and Alasei are walking in. They're discussing their need to make their clones essential because Rampart's plans essentially would remove the Kaminoans from having any influence on the Empire at all, the burgeoning Empire. They talk about Jango Fett's genetic material degrading. Lamassu mentions Nala's experiment to make a superior genetic clone, which will secure their relationship with the Empire. Nala says she needs a direct source. The clones required will not return willingly. Lama says they only need one. And let's keep going here because we only have a few more minutes here. We also see Crosshair come back with the rest of the ES troopers, and he kind of looks at where Wrecker had been kind of marking how many days, the missions, all of this. They're back in that kind of hangout area that we'd seen from the first episode, and then we see them all branch off, and there is Crosshair by himself sitting on the bunk, and they do a wide shot to show how alone he really is. And to juxtapose that, we go back to the ship. The Bad Batch replace the capacitor, take off. Wrecker, who was made to stay back because of his injury, has a surprise for Omega, makes her close her eyes, walks her over, pulls the curtain back, and it's her own little room. She says she never had her own room before, and Hunter says, well, now you're part of this squad too. Cue the waterworks. Talk to me about these two juxtaposed moments, and also this conversation where the Kaminoans are realizing we've got to do something here to ensure our existence, ensure our survival.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering when they were saying, like, we just need one. I don't know if this is like a first generation clone thing. Like, obviously, right. Jango Fett is off the table. Are they? I don't think that they would be talking about Boba at this point. Like, I am curious who they were actually referring to. I didn't assume it was the Bad Batch either. I'm curious. Immediately my head goes Rex, just because he's the most prominent clone still out there. Yeah, I mean, I know it might not make sense, but when she's saying we just need one of them, I'm thinking like it's going to be a character of some significance. That's what I'm presuming. I could be completely wrong. Right. I love the
they only need one. So what one are they referring to? That's a good point. Yeah. All right, go ahead, man. Go ahead.
I love the isolation of Crosshair. I love the fact that Nosh got a promotion from vice admiral to admiral with Tarkin clearly leaving it in his hands, being like, yeah, it's in your very capable hands. So I'm assuming I'm going to get to hear my buddy a lot more over the next few weeks. And then it's like, so when I watch for all of our episodes, I watch the episode once for enjoyment and then I'll watch it again. And I take my notes. And so yesterday I got to my girlfriend's from after work, had a long day. I was tired. It's like, ah, let's have a glass of wine. I gotta take my notes here. And then we get to the end and I see those blinds that Wrecker made. And I don't know, I just see Wrecker in his gigantic hands trying to sew. and that was a moment, like, you know, two glasses of wine in, and I'm like, she's asking, are you okay? It's fine, it's Star Wars. But yeah, I thought the way that it ended was just so sweet. It was just so nice and such a moment of lightness compared to the relative darkness of the rest of the episode.
Yeah. Mikey, what'd you think here? Beautiful ending for sure. And, you know, you compare that to what Crosshair went through. What'd you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ending was really great. Really quickly, before I say what I want to say about that, on the whole Kaminoan conversation, I am really intrigued because, like, the Jango Fett material's degrading. If your experiment can yield a superior clone, which your experiment sounds like Omega. I mean, and if that was your experiment, why did you let her go away with the Bad Batch, which we clearly saw happen? The clones required will not return willingly. Their property, we only need one. I took it as like, that is the clones required won't return willingly does seem to me to be the Bad Batch. Like Rex, as much as we love him and is one of the most amazing clone characters, from a DNA standpoint is no different from any other clone. The Bad Batch with their enhanced abilities are, but then that doesn't really make sense because if they only need one, they do currently have Crosshair just sitting there. So it's like what they are talking about was still very vague. And I was like, what is this? I could be completely wrong too. I mean, a week from now, it's going to be like, we need Rex, and Shannon's going to be like, aha. But, so we'll see. We'll see what it is. Again, just to the sort of everything being poetry and kind of echoing, I just loved Crosshair going into the old bunks with the gang and sitting there completely isolated as these new troop, as his new squad takes their place and literally replaces the others. And then to see Omega get this room that's warm and glowing with everybody gathered around her and them saying, you're a part of our team. Like, you just, it enhances the love that you have for the way that they're embracing Omega, while at the same time enhancing just the sadness that you feel for Crosshair, despite the fact that we just watched him do horribly, horribly dark things in the world of Star Wars. And I thought that was just so well done. That makes me curious to see where we're going with Omega, although I do agree with Laura that the longer they drag it out, the more I'm just kind of like, all right, what's the deal? But I like fascinated to see where we're going to go with Crosshair.
What's the deal with Omega? Yeah, you know, I'm still on the she's a spy without knowing she's a spy type thing. But also, Laura, I've seen on a number of other sites, I'm not trying to take any credit for this, but like some people have speculated, direct source, is Boba Fett in play here in some way? Not Omega, not Rex, not Clone Force 99. Is Boba Fett in play? Address that and also what you thought of these final two scenes here overall.
It's an interesting theory about Boba Fett. I wouldn't be surprised to see him show up here since we know that, you know, we're introducing characters in other Star Wars media and that just so that we can bring them back and hopefully draw on more fans of the show. It's a great strategy. Mm. So it totally makes sense. I do love this little bit of writing at the end with the conversation between the Kaminoans. I mean, if I wasn't already really intrigued by this show and the plot, this would be like the thing that is just going to keep me coming back because I'm just am dying to know what exactly they're talking about in this situation. And I agree, the Bad Batch, the fact that they might be talking about the Bad Batch didn't make a lot of sense to me either for the same reasons that they already have Crosshair and they only need one. I have no idea who they're talking about. So I'm just excited to see where this goes. When it comes to this last scene with Omega getting her own sort of like room on the ship, it wasn't clear to me whether or not she was sort of taking over Crosshair's space or if they had created a new space for her entirely. That I wasn't sure about, but if it is the former, it really just kind of is reinforcing my belief that like Crosshair is not going to make it out of the season alive and that she essentially is going to be replacing him. Which is really sad, but you know, we see him in that like weird MRI machine at the very beginning of the episode. We see him then being even more robotic somehow in this, in more unfeeling in this episode than he was before. We've got Tech at the beginning of the episode working on this scanner. I wonder if at some point in this show, we're going to see a mission where they actually do try to rescue him, figure out what's going on with his inhibitor chip and remove it.
Yeah.
That I think would be something that might be interesting to see if they can, if he then Crosshair is then able to sort of reconcile with what has happened to him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do love the scene at the end where she gets her own room. The fact that she gets her own toy that sort of looks like Lula, which is Wrecker's little toy that we saw in episode one. She kind of picks it up and like holds it like a baby. I was just like, oh, this is just precious. I love it. Every moment that we get of them welcoming Omega even more into the group just warms my heart.
It is a good point, actually. We know that Rex is coming in because we've seen him in the trailers. Yeah. And we know that Hunter feels really shitty about leaving Crosshair behind. But as you make this point, it does. Rex is proof that you can overcome the inhibitor chip.
Yeah.
He had a lot of Jedi help getting it there. But like when they see Rex that he is not suffering Order 66 programming the way that other clones are, it's proof that you can get that chip out, which would, in as far as everything we know about Hunter, lead them to be like, we're going back in and getting our guy and we're getting that thing out of his head. So I think that you're probably right as far as all that goes. It's gonna be really interesting to see.
And Tech with that scanner, I mean, that's laying the groundwork that that's going to happen. Take that chip out. And I'm with Laura on this. And I now, as you guys talk about it, as we're talking about it in the episode, it feels like a possible Rogue One situation where the whole Bad Batch is killed by the end. And that would be heartbreaking. And I read, don't quote me on this, but as I was scrolling through Twitter last night, someone mentioned, or one of the writers from Bad Batch, I think, mentioned, what do you do when you're writing your last cue and you get emotional?
It's Kevin Kiner, the guy who does the score.
And a lot of people are like, what does this mean? People are freaking out.
Yeah. What does it mean when you're crying when you're writing the cue for the final whatever? Yeah, I was like, oh shit.
Who's dead? But I do want to bring up one more tweet here to kind of reinforce this. I love this contrast, right? The idea of Omega being accepted into the group of the Rome room. And here is Crosshair with a sense of his own room all by himself. So this is what the choices you make, what it can lead to in the end. So very powerful stuff overall. Any final words before we wrap up here? We got about 5 minutes before we got to cut this thing off. Any final words or shall we wrap? Nope. All right, good. Thanks for the letter. Mike, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I mean, I just think like just looking at that image that you just posted of Crosshair sitting there, like as far as we've seen of Crosshair in this entire episode and up to this point, I mean, he's following orders. He's doing what his programming does. And it looks like the inhibitor chip has fully worked. He has no compunction about doing anything that he does. But this final moment where he walks into the room, sees all the marks that Wrecker had made on the wall of all the missions they completed, sits down by himself and is just sitting there in that moment, you really do get the sense that there is something missing or there is some loss there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Star Wars, for all of the ships and action and monsters and force powers and lightsabers and everything, it's like, it's about family. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a show about whether it be the Skywalker saga or the found family, your chosen family. In the Bad Batch case, Rebels. They are a family.
Yeah,
Rebels, Rogue One, like it's all, that's really what, why we keep coming back over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And does the loss of your brothers outweigh this programming? Does the love that you have, you know, or even Rex, you know, being able to hold off his programming long enough to give Ahsoka the one clue she needs to help him out, like, you know. And so with Crosshair, it's like when push comes to shove, when it really gets down to it, as much as they're programmed to do something, will the feelings he has for the rest of Clone Force 99 overcome that? And I think that's sort of why we keep coming back and why we hope And to your point, Johnny, from the very beginning, why we're probably going to end up wanting to hug Crosshair, even though he killed a bunch of people.
Yeah, like they do in Star Wars. They always redeem everybody. But also, one real quick thing, I feel like if a human counterpoint to what Crosshair is feeling in that moment at the end there, it's what a lot of really good soldiers feel as well. Just because they're good at killing people doesn't mean the ramifications of those doesn't echo into their lives, PTSD, what have you. So it gave me that vibe, being a military guy, seeing that moment. I kind of had that feeling as well. Real quick, like 20, 30 seconds, the idea of a genetically enhanced clone feels super soldier-like. Are we making too many connections here between Marvel and Star Wars under the Disney overall umbrella? Is this uncomfortable, or do you like this idea of a genetic enhanced clone, a super clone in essence?
Anybody? Well, I think the comparisons between Winter Soldier and Crosshair are definitely there, but I don't feel like the super clone is going to make us think the super soldier.
Okay.
That's just me.
All right. Mike or Alora, what do you think?
I think Star Wars, as much as they are both under the Disney banner, the things that are making Star Wars work right now and the things that make Marvel work are different enough that I don't think that they have any, until we see, until the space splits open and the Fantastic Four fly through and land on Coruscant, I think we're pretty safe.
Yikes. Laura, any thoughts on that?
No, I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay, all right. they don't call her the best color man in the business for nothing, folks. All right, let's get on out of here. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, I'd like to follow us on social media. On Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. And if you would like to follow Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
Thank you, Mikey.
Sadly, we do not have inhibitor chips in all of you to make you do what we want, so we just have to ask nicely. Here are some things that you can do so that we can continue doing all of these awesome spoiler reviews and Geek Buddies episodes and everything else. Smash the like button below. Subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw page. There is tons of awesome content. Leave your comments below. What did you think of this episode? How do you think the pacing is? What do you think is going on with Omega? What do you think is going on with Crosshair? Who do you want to see next? What other Star Wars characters would you love to see show up? If you are listening to us on a podcast, whether it's Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, definitely leave us some ratings, leave us some stars there. It helps us go up in the rankings. And the best thing that you can do is retweet this video, post it on your Facebook page, send it to your friends, say, hey, this is where all the Star Wars talk is happening. You want to be a part of it. That would be amazing.
There you go. And of course, thanks again to Laura Kelly for joining us for this review. We always appreciate it. Laura, where can they find you and what you got going on?
Sure. Come find me down @ShutUp_Laura on Twitter. You can follow my show, Force Toast Star Wars Happy Hour, @ForceToastPod. And stay tuned for me and Roke are going to be talking about Admiral or whatever title he has now in the Clone Wars. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Imperial Governor. So, yeah.
We'll be talking about Willif Tarkin in our next episode of The Jedi Way, so stay tuned for that.
Definitely an interesting story as we're doing research for that show. Very excited to talk about it. Don't miss it, coming out soon. All right, take care, everybody. We love you madly, and we'll talk to you next time on another brand new spoiler review episode here from the
Geek
Buddies!
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season 2 even more memorable together.